Hi, welcome to the Vietnamese podcast. Today I have Evelyn May Linh. She is a friend that I've known for a few years now, and your journey is really unbelievable. And here we are in the studio in LA. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Yeah. I want to go through a few things, your life up until this moment. The big thing is you are in the production of Phantom of the Opera, and we're going to talk about how you got there. There is very, very few Vietnamese people who's made it to Broadway. So this is a big deal. Mm-hmm. I want to take us back to your parents and, you know, how they thought of music and your journey.
My parents actually always loved music. Like growing up, I was always surrounded by music. My dad would play guitar and sing, and my mom would sing along with him. And they would have these singing parties at my house where they would bring a bunch of their friends over and they would just sing a bunch of Vietnamese songs. So growing up, I was always surrounded by music, but none of them like followed it as a career. So when I told them that like I wanted to major in music in college, like they were definitely shocked for sure, but
okay. Yeah. But before you even get to that, them being shocked, when you were in their living room listening to them playing, did it come naturally to you?
Honestly, I was a really shy kid growing up. I never would have saw myself singing or being a performer in any way. I thought I was just going to be like a doctor of some sort, but I actually watched Phantom of the Opera, like the movie Phantom of the Opera, the 2004 movie with Gerard Butler and Emmy Rossum, when I was like 12 or 13. And I just got hooked and I asked my mom to take singing lessons. And from then I was just like, it became like a huge passion of mine and I couldn't think of anything else.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah.
Wait, real quick, random question. Did Gerard Butler sing?
Wait, you never watched the movie?
No.
Oh, wow. Okay, that should be on your list then.
So he does sing?
Yeah, he sings in the movie.
I cannot imagine Gerard Butler singing.
I know. I mean, okay.
But he didn't do Raoul, right?
No, he was Phantom. Okay. He was the Phantom. Right. Honestly, like, it did the job. Like, it got me hooked to the story and the music. A lot of people complain about the singing quality in that movie.
Okay, yeah, because I can't imagine Gerard Butler. Maybe Hugh Jackman, but like Gerard Butler. All right.
He has like a husky, like more of like a rock sound, I'd say. Like, then like a more,
he's not Michael Crawford.
He doesn't sound trained or operatic at all.
Yeah. Because I remember growing up and listening to Michael Crawford and, you know, I can't imagine Gerard Butler.
No, Gerard Butler, he like learned how to sing for this role. Like he didn't really sing before this.
Got it.
Yeah. But I think it worked. Like it had like a rawness to it. And it just, you know, it worked on me. So and here I am, right?
Yeah. So you were that young and thinking and obsessing about it at that time. Did you tell your mom?
Yeah, she knew. So like I tried to sing the songs, and then I asked my mom to take voice lessons. And
you were 12?
Yeah, 12. And then my mom was ecstatic at first because I was super shy, and she was like, oh, finally, something to get her out of her shell. And my mom loves singing, too. So she thought it would just be a great hobby. And she actually got me into singing Vietnamese songs, too. So I started singing Vietnamese songs in the community, like on like small stages. My mom would like host concerts a lot. Like she's a leader of, I don't know if you know UCA.
It's Scouts?
Like, she's a leader of Scouts, but also like a singing group called UCA. It's like...
Oh, you sing UCA or no?
Yeah.
Oh. No?
No, it's like Zoo, like
oh, Zuka.
Yeah, Zuka.
Okay.
I was like, I'm pretty sure you're Nam, so that's why I chose that. To say it that way.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I am Nam, but I am Bak, so my ears can go.
Oh, you're Bak?
Yeah. My mother is from the north. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know why I thought you were Nam. I just assumed that you're Nam.
And, you know, yeah. I mean, most of my family speak southern.
Okay.
My mom's family originally from the north.
Okay.
So she, your mom was like really into music and Scouts.
Yeah, Scouts. Yeah. So I grew up in scouts because my parents like led a whole scout troop. And yeah, they would always like have scout songs, you know, during the camps or just like in meetings. They would like force us to learn these like Vietnamese scouting songs.
But did you sing and perform at the, they have like these talent shows, like when you go camping, right?
Yeah.
The mini talent shows?
Yeah, I would. After I started taking voice lessons. Actually, you know what? There's this one time when I was a kid, like elementary school, still shy. My mom forced me to like do a duet with her. And I remember being on stage and I like would not make a sound. Like I was just standing there and my mom was singing. And I was just so shy, you know, like that's why like people were so surprised that I'm a singer now or a performer. Cause like if they knew me as a kid, like they're like, they saw like how shy I was.
But... So you just froze?
Yeah.
and nothing would come out?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Are you getting secondhand embarrassment?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. Actually, I'm not. And actually, what it triggers memories of so many comedians that I study.
Oh, interesting.
And comedians are shy.
Oh, that's interesting.
Comedians have like, I'm not saying everybody, but generally, like I've heard so many comedian stories and actors.
Oh, okay.
All become they come from shy places.
I think when we're like, when artists are like really sensitive, you know, to emotions, we tend to like keep it to ourselves, and we might feel like it's too much for people. So I think that's what causes our shyness.
Yeah. You know? And so you had to work it out over the years.
Yeah, I think singing was a great outlet for that, for sure. Yeah. But yeah, I took voice lessons when I was 12, and then I started getting like lead roles in my school musicals. Like in my like middle school, I got like a lead role in my musical, which I, you know, never would have thought to do that. But and then I started getting like solos in my choirs when I would go to high school, and like lead roles in my musicals in high school. And yeah, like I said, it was the only thing I could think about. And I was sitting in my, I just remember sitting in my biology classes, and like I would not be paying attention at all. And I knew at that moment that like that wasn't going to be the right path for me. So, yeah.
And did your mom and dad pressure you or?
Honestly, I think they accepted it after the initial shock. They were just shocked because, you know, like who, they don't really have examples of people succeeding in that, like going
for
it. Yeah. So they were definitely like worried about my future. And I think that's why my mom like got me so she became my momager in a way. She would just like find every opportunity for me to perform in the Vietnamese community just to like give me any chance, you know.
You really have to like, I mean, I'm, you know, you brought up something earlier about me feeling embarrassed for you. No, I actually feel the exact opposite. I feel the gratitude that your mother was in your life to kind of like give you that sort of opportunity, you know, as a momager and somebody who could see that her involvement will really transform your life, you know? And as a parent myself, I kind of just feel so much love for her, you know?
Yeah, she's a super mom. Like she has 4 kids. I have 3 older brothers. And she does like she owns her own business as an optometrist, and she like has her scout, like she leads a whole scout troop, and she's like my momager. Like she's never not busy. So she's amazing.
And now, I mean, she's in the medical, you said she's in the medical field, right? And do they ever give you any heat for, you know, not pursuing a medical path anymore? Are they pretty settled with where you're?
I think they're pretty settled with it. I don't think they ever wanted me to necessarily go in a medical path. That was just like the one thing that I knew because I grew up around it. But they were just like worried that I because I chose a path that was unstable and that was like very uncertain. Like if I chose like, I don't know, being a business person, they would have been okay with that too, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, just the arts is so unstable.
But do you still think it's unstable? I mean, it looks like you're pretty stable.
No, it's definitely unstable. You know, if I lose this job, like, I mean, I don't want to put that out there, but like, you know, it'd be hard for me to find stable work outside of this, you know? Yeah. So I'd say it's still pretty unstable.
But do you think that, like, I've heard you sing,
mm-hmm.
and I know what it means, and it signifies to be in the production of Phantom of the Opera here as it's moving around the country.
Mm-hmm.
I know the kind of talent it takes to be a part of that. But don't you think, like, if you have enough talent that you'll always be employed in the business?
I hope so.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I'll never know until I get out there again. But I would hope so. I mean, I feel very secure in my talent, but... there's so many other elements, like what, I mean, it's pretty amazing that they casted me, like, as an Asian person to play yeah. this iconic role. But, like, what if another production doesn't want to do that, you know? I brought this up to you personally, but, like, my dancing skills aren't as strong as my singing skills. So, like, what if they want someone who's, like, a stronger dancer? So it's always, you know, there's so many different elements
to it. And being somebody who comes from the creative world, do you think that your dancing side can ever be improved to match your singing side? Or is that really talent-based?
I think it can with time, for sure. Yeah, time and effort, really. But, you know, it took me 10 years. To get to where I am here in Phantom. So for my dancing skills to match that, I would have to, you know, like, really put in extra
years
effort.
Into
yeah,
yeah,
for sure. But I think, like, I mean, I can do enough to be in Phantom. So, like, I'm yeah. sure, like, I think I do have the capability to do it. I just need to do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really.
You know, I'm fascinated with this idea of talent. You know, mm-hmm. I shared it with you years ago. In my 20s, right after 9/11,
mm-hmm.
I got out of the film business and I pursued, you know, singing. And, you know, it's funny because we were talking about it, you were laughing about it. But at the time, I knew that whatever I was doing would never be even anything near the Evelyns of my class, right? Because I just know, like, when you have it, now I'm living life and I'm interviewing a lot of creatives. Mm-hmm. I know when you have it, you have it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just got to work at it and then polish it and yeah. get, like, really, like, you need to master the technical side of things.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you say to people who are coming up who don't have it?
You know, there's a saying, like, hard work beats talent. Mm. I think there, you definitely do still have a chance if you really
want it.
Yeah, if you really want it. But it's just obviously going to be harder than if you have talent already. Like, for example, some people are tone deaf. That's just something that they're born with. They can't hear
yeah.
that they're not singing the right pitch. And I did teach voice before.
But there's no getting over that, right? I mean, you cannot,
like,
be a
slowly
singer.
Slowly.
Wait, so you,
like,
can.
I mean, it could get better. Like, I don't know if you'll be like Beyonce, you know. But you
can improve?
I think you can improve. Yeah, if with the right guidance, you can. You can improve. It'll just be slower. Yeah. It'll be slower.
And I think in the journey of improving, there's a beauty to that too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't always have to end in, like, you being a superstar, so.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. Like me. I mean, case in point, I went through it, and the whatever 6 years that I went through it, you know, I got a little bit better, but, oh my God, I never, like, look back on that part of my life and go, why didn't I do it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it has helped me understand other people a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you don't have it, but you have the passion for it, you incrementally get better and better, but you won't be the Beyonce, you know, you can't, but there's other beautiful things that come out of it, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Yeah, I think whenever I teach voice, I always make sure to highlight, like, the joy of music and the, like, how it makes my student feel, and, like, make sure that they never lose, like, their spark or their, like, their love for music. I think that's, like, the most important thing about learning like taking voice lessons. It's like just learning how to fall in love with music, I guess. Yeah.
I want to track your progression to go from high school to Chapman at NYU, NYU to Phantom. If we can go through that sort of like that process of like going, I want to do this for life, or no, did it not start out that way?
Oh, like
from high school.
High school.
Yeah.
I thought I wanted to be like an optometrist or like a dermatologist or something in early high school. And then once I realized that like this was the only, like music was the only thing I was thinking about, and I would go home and all I would be doing was practicing my songs and singing in my room all night for hours. Like, then I realized like, oh, I can actually do this. I think I was like winning competitions and stuff too. So like, I was like, okay, I'm just going to go for it. I think there's like a part of me that is very like, if I feel like really strongly about something, I'll go for it. And I felt really strongly about it at the time. So I just decided to go for it. So yeah. And then Chapman, I was really focused on opera training. Mm. So I didn't take any like dance or acting classes. Like I really strictly focused on my voice. And I learned like how to sing different languages, like Italian, French, German. And like the whole technique, my vocal technique was just really polished at Chapman. And then after Chapman, I had like a gap year, and I was just singing gigs around California, like in the Vietnamese community or like at, you know, churches here and there. I mean, I would fly like around the country for it too, but you know, it was still like small gigs.
Yeah.
And I decided I wanted to pursue musical theater. I wanted to be in New York. Like that's the main reason why I chose NYU. It was like, I wanted to be in New York. So I applied. Like, I think I sent my application in like literally the day that it was due. But like, it was like really last minute, kind of last minute. Like I remember like calling people up and being like, I'm not sure if I'm going to actually like go for it or not. Like, I don't know. It's really expensive. I don't know if I should do it or not. But then they were like, you know what? Just apply and see what happens. So I applied. And then I think like 2 weeks later, I got like an acceptance letter. I was like, oh shit, I guess I'm actually going there. Like, this is like, it's happening. I'm moving my whole life to New York. And that was so instrumental in my, like, I think in my career building, just like being where all the energy is. Like, I love California for the weather and it's beautiful, but there's just not as active of a like a live performance industry. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to be where it was all happening, you know, where I could just like go to see a live performance any night of the week, and just be in like the energy.
How did you know about that?
New York?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
As you're growing up here in Orange County.
Yeah. Okay. So I actually, funny enough, I saw a Facebook post, like a random, like, so I joined, like, I was a huge Phantom fan, right? So I joined like a Facebook Phantom fan group. And then like randomly one day, I think this is during COVID, I saw a post from, she plays Carlotta in the Broadway, or she played Carlotta in the Broadway production of Phantom. She was saying like, oh, I'm hosting a summer intensive on Zoom. So I applied to that. It's like a Phantom themed summer intensive where like we would take master classes with people from Phantom Broadway and like learn more about Phantom. So I took that, of course, because I was a huge Phantom fan.
And this was during NYU or?
During Chapman, actually, like during COVID. Yeah, so I took that Zoom thing. And then the next year after I graduated Chapman, there was an in-person one in New York. So she was hosting the same thing, but in New York, like in person. So I signed up for that as well. I was like, oh my gosh, like that would be a dream come true to like actually meet the Phantom cast like in person and work with them and be in New York. And I had the greatest time there. I remember just like feeling at home when I was there. Yeah. I remember like when I had to leave, like I think on the last day of the intensive, I like filmed myself and I was like, I know I'm going to be back here. Like, I literally, like, told myself that, like, I'm going to be back here. So I guess, like, that's what prompted me to apply to NYU after graduating Chapman. Was, like, going there for the intensive and feeling the energy and being around people who, like, were going for the same thing that I was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
this episode is brought to you by Redboat Fish Sauce. Some things will never be replicated by AI. The fragrance of fish sauce hitting a hot pan, the sound of your grandmother's voice telling a story only she knows, the feeling of a family recipe passed down through generations that are imperfect, alive, and completely real. Redboat Fish Sauce has been a proud sponsor of the Vietnamese podcast for years because, like us, they believe in authenticity you can taste. And together we're bringing you the Viet Story Bank, a recording service built on that same belief. Your stories matter. Your family's memories, your lived experiences, your history. These deserve to be preserved exactly as they are. Untouched, unfiltered, they're human. So don't wait for the right moment. Learn more about the Viet Story Bank through the link in our show notes and pick up a bottle of fish sauce at H Mart, 99 Ranch, or redboatfishsauce.com.
You know, as I'm hearing your story and, you know, I mean, obviously we share a dear friend in our life, Wynn. And I remember hearing you going through the decision to go to NYU, but from Wynn.
Oh, you're serious? He would share, that's crazy.
He would share it with me because, you know, he's like losing, right? Like, you know, you're, you know, he would share that. And I remember thinking, what a huge decision for a young person to go from Orange County to New York. And I'm like, how do people even understand that massive decision in their life? Because I remember him, he didn't go into details, but he was like, yeah, you were considering it and you just got in. And, you know, I remember, because that was, you know, I remember when he met you at the Hammer Museum, you know, I got to hear it from the community, right? Like, we were all in the same community, and I remember, and then all of a sudden you were thinking about going to NYU and you applied. And I remember thinking what a big decision that was, and not everybody has that resolve to move to NYU or to New York. And that's a huge step. How do we know that those kinds of things are the right things to do? That's kind of like really what I wanted to know.
Yeah, like I said, like ever since the beginning, it was just like a strong feeling that I had. You know, ever since I like decided to major in it in college, it was like a really strong feeling. And same thing for New York. I think I had that really strong feeling when I was there for the intensive, and I told myself I was going to be back. So, I really was just following that.
Yeah, that call. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people say it. You know, a lot of these successful people are like, you got to, like, really see yourself already in it. Like, you can already imagine you being in that position already. You know, like Jim Carrey wrote a check out to himself for $10
million. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I should do that, too.
Yeah, he did it. And then, yeah, that's what he did. And he's like, I felt it. I knew that my acting and my... my work validated this check. And that's what I'm seeing.
Oh, okay.
You know, in your journey to get to New York. And now, what does it look like after Phantom?
Oof.
Like one day, what happens, you know, in the year or two? I don't know how long this is gonna go on for you, but I mean, what is it that you wanna do after this journey?
That's been the hardest question for me because Phantom, like, obviously has been the biggest goal in my life. Ever since I was a kid, that was like, oh my God, I want to, like, have the privilege to, like, be in this world and to sing this music. And I've since I've gotten that, it's like, whoa, like, what do I do after, right?
Yeah.
But I do hope that I will be able to, like, write my own musical one day. That is something that, like, I've wanted to do for a bit, but like I just haven't really sat down and gone for it. So hopefully I can write my own musical or just like my own music, maybe. So we'll see. If not, like I am open to doing other shows as well. But of course, like Phantom just had that like really special place in my heart. Yeah. So, yeah.
You know, being in this world, when I think about, I think about the two Filipino singers, like Eva.
Yeah, Nobuzada.
Nobuzada and
Lea Salonga.
Lea Salonga. Yeah. And I don't see other Vietnamese Broadway singers in the last, I don't know, 20, 30 years of anybody pursuing this. Why do you think that there's not a lot of Vietnamese people in this space?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I'd say we're generally, like, I think we're kind of new in this, I don't know, like, I think because of war, too, we had to rebuild a lot and, like, go through a lot of trauma or heal a lot of our trauma. And a lot of that comes with, like, the survival mindset that a lot of our parents had, you know? And I think that's why a lot of them didn't choose to go for a risky
career.
Yeah. And, you know, my generation is, like, the next generation after my parents.
But do you see a lot of people your age pursuing it?
Not a lot.
Not a lot.
Definitely not a lot, yeah. I mean, I'm sure their parents are still in the same mindset, so, like, I'm sure they,
So they're being blocked.
Yeah, or it's just, like, maybe they're not exposed to it, or, but I'm sure a huge part of it is, like, the survival mindset of their parents.
So going back to, like, performers, and I'm asking, like, partly for my own soul's purpose, but also because, like, young people who listen to this podcast, I want to know, like, how do you know if you're good? How do you know if you have it? How do you know if you're at Chapman and you're going, I really got it?
Yeah.
But then how do you know, how do you judge how good things are?
For me, it's a feeling thing as well. Like, for vocal technique, they always say that, like, it shouldn't feel hard. I think a lot of people, like, when they first start to sing and, like, they try to stretch their voice, like, to sing high or loud or, like, belt, a lot of them, like, a lot of people will tend to, like, want to strain or, like, you know, force it out. And I think singing should feel like a release. It shouldn't feel forced at all. And I think it just kind of came naturally to me. Or maybe I just, like, put in that many hours because I was, like, so passionate about it, where, like, it felt very natural to me. Like, it doesn't feel forced. Like, I can, yeah, it doesn't hurt or anything. So that was, like, the first kind of feeling, is, like, physical feeling. It feels very comfortable, but also, like, emotionally, you kind of get into, like, the flow.
Zone.
Yeah, a zone or, like, a flow. where, like, you're just, I don't even know how to describe it. It's just like you're not really thinking about how you're being perceived. You're just thinking about, you're just, like, releasing an emotion or a sound or, like, a feeling. You're just, yeah, you're just kind of like a, you feel like a vessel almost. Yeah. So that's another, like, layer of it. And then also seeing how it affects other people. Of course, like, if people are, like, yawning or, like, checking their phone or, like, leaving the room, you know, like, you're probably not that good. But if people, like, get quiet or, like, want to stay and, like, yeah, you can, I think you can kind of just, like, tell when people are being genuine or not.
Yeah. Those are such interesting replies. Yeah. The zone one is something I'd never thought of. Yeah. Mm.
Have you ever, like, because I know you like singing too. Like, how do you feel when you sing?
Definitely not what you just described. Okay. Definitely not.
Okay.
I think the zone one is difficult because I'm always paying attention to what other people are thinking and hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not able to be in the zone.
Mm-hmm.
I think the hours that you've spent, if you're really good, if you're smart at what you do, from a physical level and you just get it, then the more hours you put into it, the better you get, right? But if you're not really good at it, no matter how much you train, you just don't get good at it, right?
I think you can definitely get better. Like, it'll just be slower, but I think you can get better.
Yeah. There's levels to all of it. But I think I love to sing. And then now that I'm singing just a handful of songs, and I've done it thousands of times, then I know now what you're talking about.
Okay. Right?
With just the handful of songs that I sing. Mm-hmm. And I don't have the bandwidth to go beyond that anymore, but those are enough to show off, right? Mm-hmm. So the songs to be in the zone and to for people to put their phones down and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. For me, it's like, I try to think that I'm like sending a message to people. Like I'm trying to move people. Like I'm not, I guess I try not to be like, oh, look at me. Like when I'm singing, I'm trying to like actually like say something. Like even if I'm singing in a different language or like, you know, I sing opera a lot and like a lot of people don't get it at first, but they could still like feel something.
Yeah.
So yeah, just like being very intentional about like what message I'm trying to get across when I'm singing. Yeah.
You know, opera is the exact opposite of AI. It's the exact opposite. It's like physical. It's one of a kind. The signatures that come out of like each person's throat. The ability to do that in real time is something that AI will never replace. I mean, it's like bulletproof. You can't swap out a human being that's like trained at your level to with an AI. But do you ever consider like how it's changing the musical landscape?
AI?
Yeah.
So far, I feel like it's been kind of cool to see like all these new tools to be able to help people. Like I know a lot of producers use AI to like make their process a lot faster. But yeah, like, I don't think you could ever replace that, like, that live experience. I don't feel threatened by AI at all, to be honest.
Yeah, there's...
Yeah.
And I'm not paying for a robot to perform what you do. Yeah. I'll never do that, right? Yeah. Like, that's just not something I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. Because the whole point of, like, having my ears receive your physical production, right? Mm-hmm. That's why I would pay... And you know, nowadays, there's no way that you know, is going to be replaced by a robot.
Yeah. I think it'll try to, for sure. And we'll see how good it is. But I don't think it'll get there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
you know, you're relatively brand new to the scene professionally. But I know that the next few years... whatever journey you take, this is like the beginning, the first episode that we get to sit here and talk about. But I want to kind of like wrap up this episode with maybe perhaps, we talked a little bit about it, but is there like sort of like any primal direction, any, you know, deep down urge that you have to take a path that you want to take in the future?
Yeah, I guess I hope I can become a principal Christine one day, like in a, like whether it's this production or another production. There's honestly a lot of productions of Phantom going on at the same time. There's like the West End production, the international production, you know, the US tour. So yeah, hopefully one day like a spot will open up at the right time when I'm like ready to be a principal. Yeah.
Oh, that's a fantastic answer. Yeah. So you do, there's a long runway for you within Phantom.
Mm-hmm, yeah. They told me ever since the beginning of me joining, like it would be a long process for me. And I think like it could feel a little disheartening sometimes because it's like, oh, how long is it going to take? But it's also like you just have to have a lot of faith. Like, and if you really love it and keep working on it, I'm sure like.
How many Christines are there in the world today that are singing in productions?
A lot.
Oh, really?
Actually, there's a lot. Yeah. Because there was one in Australia that closed recently, too. There was one in Mexico City as well. And there's one in Vienna happening as well.
Oh my God, that's a lot.
Yeah, so there's a lot.
And there's one in the US that you're part of. And that's a lot. That's a lot of productions. And they don't just like stop, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they pick up year after year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Phantom, I don't think will die anytime soon.
Yeah. What other musicals do you really like?
I like it. Okay, controversial take. I like the songs in Miss Saigon, and there's something about Miss Saigon that's like intriguing to me because it's controversial. And because it's never been headed by like Vietnamese cast. Yeah. You know, it's always been like Filipino women. So I think that would be kind of interesting if I could get into that. What else? I think anything like golden age musical theater, which is like Rodgers and Hammerstein. Oops. Yeah, that kind of era.
You know that Miss Saigon one is, God, it is such a like unlucky, because it's good, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
You know, that's, I want to
yeah,
say
yeah.
it. You know,
yeah, yeah.
I saw it and I'm like, oh God, the music is good, but the premise, you know, especially for us Vietnamese, you know, it's like, yeah, it's really bad, right? It's so bad, but damn, you just like wipe off a whole musical at that level, you know, completely off the map. But we have a problem with it because we are the, you know, the characters who are not being portrayed in a just light, right? Mm-hmm. But do you know if other people beyond the Asian community feel the same way we do?
I don't think so.
I don't think so, right?
Yeah. I think that's why it's still going on.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they don't really care.
They don't care.
Yeah.
I don't think people care.
I genuinely don't think people even know what, like, the difference between Vietnamese people and Filipino people are. Right. I've gotten that a lot, like, in the musical theater community. They're like, oh, you're Filipino, right? Like, or like, oh, like, I was doing another interview with Johnny from Vietcomedia, and he was asking me, like, oh, how does it feel to be like, you know, one of the few Vietnamese Americans in musical theater? And then one of the monitors that were just sitting next to us, like publicity monitors in Phantom, like she jumps in and she's like, oh, actually there's Asian people that have played Cosette in Les Mis. I think she was like Chinese or something. And we're like, okay, that has nothing to do with like, you know, what we're talking about.
She jumped in the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know if we could actually add this on to the video, but
I don't know if we could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like my professors at NYU too, like they just don't know. You know, there's just so little Asian representation that it doesn't matter to them. Like Filipino, Vietnamese, it's like the same thing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but ultimately, it doesn't matter to the big world, right?
Mm-hmm.
It matters to us, but it doesn't matter to the big world.
Exactly.
Well, I'm glad that you're representing us, and I look forward to the next few years. You know, I'm truly excited to see where you have such a long runway, you know, and so talented. How can people see this production?
Oh yeah, you know we're gonna be everywhere in the U.S. So there's so many opportunities to see this. But if you're based in California, we'll be in California for a while, L.A. for a couple more weeks, and then Costa Mesa for 3 weeks, and San Diego for 2 weeks, and San Jose for 2 weeks. And that's the end of our California tour. But yeah, we're gonna be in like Texas area in December. I know there's. I don't know if there's other, like, if there's a lot of Vietnamese community, like, in other states. Like, we're going to a lot of Midwest states. Southern or, like, East Coast states. So,
During these months ahead, you can't perform gigs. Like, if your mom had, a big gig for you, could you perform?
I guess technically I could. I would just have to take a personal day.
Yeah.
So call off. Or as like a sick day if I really wanted to. Unless it falls on a Monday, you know?
Yeah.
Mondays are our only days off. So
yeah,
it's a busy schedule.
Evelyn, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're very welcome. And it was an honor and a privilege. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Crystal Trinh.
please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.